listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, September 18th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm very glad to be here, but especially tonight.
Oh, I know.
We're going to have a great show.
We're going to finally have a good discussion here on this program, I'll tell you what. But can't wait for our guest. Looking forward to it. And always have to say, so happy to see our regulars and some new names in the chat. Love the community we have. Love this group of curious, like-minded individuals. And love coming together with you guys. Also, a shout-out to people that listen to us in the archives. We always love getting your feedback as well, and thank you for taking the time. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. And, of course, as always, we're going to start with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, on to our topic. Now, it is going to be a great program tonight because we are joined by our friend, definitely a friend of the program at this point, Dr. Rick Teleska. Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be back again. It's been a little bit of time, but it's always interesting when we have our discussions here.
Oh, I know. I always appreciate them, and I'm really looking forward to this topic because I've appreciated touching base with you on AI in the past, and I think you have a very unique look at it, an informed opinion. And, you know, I think we can just jump right into it, and I think maybe we can start. What do you think of the condition of AI today? I mean, I know we have some points we're going to go over as well, and I love that that sheet, but that's just kind of a starting point.
You know, I think with the nature of computing, we have come so far that we really are on the cusp of creating sentient intelligence. And when I look at this, what comes to mind all the time is, just because we can, should we? And what a lot of people don't realize, back in the 1980s, I actually worked on an AI project. And at that point, it was more of what we call limited memory, super fast machines. But we just didn't have the processing power to make it work. Mm. There were discussions back then about just having doctors speak into a machine, record every piece of information they have, and try and program that in. Well, today we've got the power. And tomorrow, which might actually be tomorrow, we're going to have more of that power, especially as we get into quantum computing. So that's when I saw some people make some comments. Is this just scary? Well, you know, I've been in this kind of a business for a lot of years. Yeah, it's starting to get scary.
So before the program, I told you, and this is probably a great place to inject this, when they're using bacteria and plants with AI now, how does that work? And I went, OMG, when I saw that article.
You know, I wish I could tell you how all that works. I don't know that much about it. But what I can tell you is about the use of DNA, which is basically the same idea, whether it be plant DNA, human-style DNA. But by using the DNA chain, we can store data. We can build We can replicate a DNA chain and actually put data in there. Wow. And what they do, there's a new system out. It's called it's a DNA infused chip, and it can perform calculations 10 times beyond what we can do today, 1,000 times what we can do today. And it's actually part of a what they call a multi-fluid chip. So this DNA has to be in some type of a fluidity. And using the DNA chain, they can actually store data. And they're doing the same thing with plants. Mm. And we also know bacteria. Now, what it comes down to, and this is something I think Dr. Vicky is going to like, is what I think it comes down to is it kind of proves one of my beliefs is that everything comes down to energy and consciousness is energy. Mm. And plants have energy. Everything has energy. And if we're saying we're getting into that energy of the plants, okay, and quantum physics supports all this, then we're starting to talk about getting very close to sentient, self-aware machines.
That's what's so alarming. I mean, you know, we've talked about that previously, Michael, and I have said I couldn't see how, that, you know, something AI could have a consciousness. And now I think I have to change my mind.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm just a little... I'm a little dumbstruck right now. I'm going to have to compose myself. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
Well, what it comes down to, too, is what I always worry about is if we reach singularity, okay, and singularity is when the computer intelligence surpasses us or surpasses the creator, will they behave as we do?
I hope not. Now,
that could be scary, okay? Especially if they're driving a car. But, I mean, that could be really scary. If they look at their own survival. Now, I don't know how many people, a lot of people have seen Star Trek, even the old ones. Well, I'm a fan of the very old ones, and I don't know if anybody remembers the episode about the M1 computer.
Was that the, didn't they call it like the Changeling or something like that? Wasn't it, a drone sent that out was, that became super intelligent?
The Changeling was Nomad.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It could be like Voyager could get changed out there. This is one where I forgot the Dr. Carl something. I forgot his name. But they used a computer to run the Enterprise. Now, the Enterprise would replace the entire crew. Remember, they went through an exercise, and when the other ships started to give up, M1 kept going after them. And when they tried to take M1 down, it fought back. It didn't want to be killed. Is this what we're looking at in the future? Is this what might have happened to extraterrestrial life that might have been here on Earth? Did they create the Greys as a biological entity, a biological system, which I know a lot of people believe that to be true, that then that system surpassed that of their creators, and now we see them as the more prevalent type when we hear reports of extraterrestrial visitations, contacts, so on and so forth.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the sky's the limit, right? You know, one thing that was really foundational for me, because I saw it when I was a kid, first off, and it really just made me think about life, is early episode of Next Generation. They're talking about, I think this is the, I can't remember the title, something like the... Well, I'm not going to waste time on that. It was about proving that data was a life form with rights. It was the whole courtroom episode, you know, very poignant and powerful. They were having a discussion, and to make everybody feel more at ease, Captain Picard said, if it makes everybody feel better, think of us as machines as well. We are biochemical machines. He is a mechanical, you know, machine of metal and circuitry. But that kind of makes sense, especially when you're talking about the chip with DNA. I mean, mathematics is really present in all biology also. We have programming. We have, you know, you could think of our instinct as software, right? You could think of the potential talents of every person, you know, as hardware, right? Depending on what those talents are, that could be the hardware. I think one interesting thing is, you know, what is the user? And that's kind of where free will and things comes into play. And I think that user could also come into software. Yes, at this point, as far as we know, and I'm probably wrong at this point, computer programs cannot change their own code. I mean, we have code, but we can change it. We
can
change
with
our
AI.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I said I'm probably wrong at this point. I don't know if AI can change its own code.
Rick, what do you think?
We're not quite there yet. It can alter its path.
Mm.
See?
But it has algorithms and it has models. And when we think of the AI models, think of an AI model. The simplest thing I could explain it as is a giant database. And we're talking a giant database, the size of buildings. So large they need to be. This is the problem with AI right now. For us to get to what we want to do, what some companies want to do, Amazon has talked about this, we would need buildings so large to hold the models that we just can't do it yet. You know that some people don't realize this, but all the data that's collected on you through every I think, was it Amazon that did this or Google? They have to get rid of 90% of it because they can't keep it. It's too much. That's how much data they're storing on us. So right now, what we're looking at is, you know, the basic AIs that we're using today, there's like three of them. One is called narrow AI. And what that AI can do really is it can carry out specific actions or commands. You tell it what to do, and it can do that. Image recognition is narrow AI. Self-driving cars would be narrow AI. And virtual assistants, okay? Mm-hmm. They can't learn independently, and they can't learn skills beyond their design. So they can't alter their programming. Another one that we have is reactive AI. And that's exactly what the AI does. It just reacts. They're reactionary. They can respond to requests. But they're not capable of storing memory or learning from past experiences. Mm-hmm. So we're not quite there yet. Reactive AI is IBM Deep Blue is reactive AI. They can read real-time cues like when it plays chess.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix has a recommendation engine. That's the same thing. It can make recommendations based on information presented to us. Probably the more powerful one, if you're starting to think about this, would be called limited memory AI. And what that can do is it can store past data, and it can use that data to make predictions. Okay, so it's not just a machine with a lot of data that's very fast. It can learn. Okay, and it has memory. It has short-term knowledge, and it'll actually do things or perform tasks based on that knowledge. Now, this is what you hear when you hear of something called deep learning.
Mm-hmm.
Deep learning really is what it does is kind of imitates the function of the neurons in our brain. So it allows the machine to absorb data from experiences and learn from them. And there are some limited AI examples. Chatbots and virtual assistants are basically limited AI. Again, self-driving cars. But that's about how they work. They're not going to kind of go off on their own. They can store memory, limited amounts of memory. They can remember things. They're not going to change themselves. They're not going to replicate themselves at this point. When we start to get to super intelligence and theory of mind, now we're talking real AI.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I think New York University and a Chinese university recently created tiny robots built from DNA, and they can replicate themselves.
Yeah, that's where I'm saying, how close are we? I think what you just said means we're really close.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the predictions are – there's a couple of predictions, okay? Elon Musk would say in 5 years, okay? And other people are saying, well, maybe 2040. We will have these machines that might be self-aware. So, Dr. Michael, when we say they're self-aware, what are we saying?
That's a loaded That's a loaded thing because to me, I think of it beyond the mirror test. I think of it as being aware of yourself as an autonomous entity in a universe, knowing your actions, knowing some extent of the consequences of your actions, having a measure of free will. These are all things that I associate with being self-aware.
But plants and trees and all other life forms may not reason things out like humans do, but they have their own patterns and imprints of behavior that it's been proven plants have a consciousness. They react.
Well, you know, and there are many cultures. Go to Hawaii and spend some time with the people there in their culture, how they believe everything has a soul. Mm-hmm. And I believe it.
Sure.
You know, one thing that we talk about when we talk about sentient AI, I don't know if this is the goal. The goal is that they will think and feel like a human being. All right. And here's the thing that could get dangerous. And maybe Mr. Spock had the right idea, but they will have emotions.
Mm.
That's where it can start to get dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay. Emotions are opinions sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's when I say again, are they going to start behaving like we do?
Do you think with the rapid rise in intelligence after the singularity, hypothetically, do you think there's a wisdom that would come along with any of that at all?
You know, at which point are they like humans? Now, we assume that all life must be human life. Well, we know that's probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're a life form. Do they have the same values? Will they have the same values we have?
Mm-hmm.
Will we give them the values, or will they develop their own values?
Like empathy, I think is the biggest thing, right?
Will they?
Yeah.
Ray Kurzweil thinks by 2045, we're going to have sentient, or we're going to have the singularity. We're going to have sentient machines. Now, that could be a very good thing. And it could be bad thing.
Yeah, and I think the scary part is that a creation, you know, the quintessential Frankenstein's monster, right? The creation that goes out of your control, that you can't stop. And, you know, there's a couple of things that come to mind when thinking about intelligence, too. I was thinking about pretty much every biological life form, biological awareness has to sleep in terms of, because of its consciousness to process things. And I'm wondering how that could possibly come into play with sentient AI. It was a pondering I had today. I don't know if I'd ever read anything about that, but is there something about being a conscious being that requires you to kind of shut down for a little bit? I mean, can you just run continuously, or would you go insane by doing that?
What was her name? Who was part Borg.
Seven of Nine.
Yeah, Seven of Nine had to go in her machine every now and again to, you know, reboot.
Yeah.
See, and that's a really interesting question, because now we're attributing our requirements onto a machine. Mm. And it's not a machine anymore. So will that be, I mean, we basically run on 100 watts.
Uh-huh.
My wife says I'm a little dimmer sometimes, but 100 watts. Okay. Now, what's going to power this machine? All right. Are we going to be plugging sentient computers into the wall? I mean, this is the part that people don't think about. Where does that power come from?
Mm-hmm.
Will they end up running the same way we run? Will they figure out how we run? I mean, we're looking today at things where, I forgot what it was, a month or so ago, AI came up with a solution to something in, I think it was 5 days, that previously the same ideas, it took months to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
So when they reach singularity, and they will, and they go beyond us, will they have the same values we have? Will they look at us the same way? How will they be powered? How are we going to power AI? Right now, that's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
They need so much power. They suck so much power out of the power grid for some of these computers. It's a problem.
And so, water. The water use has been extraordinary.
So how do you power them? Is it – it's not going to be fission technology. Would it be fusion technology, the power of the stars? Now, we're going to say right away, well, we don't know how to do that, even though there's a lot of progress being made. We don't know how to do it. Are we risking the fact that we're going to create something that will know how to do it?
Right. You know, I keep coming back to fictional references for all of these discussions, which makes me think again about this idea that I had, and I might be somewhere else too, but that fiction is an essential tool of the human species because it allows us to conceive of different realities and different possibilities, which has a real-world evolutionary benefit because you can plan for things. Because I'm thinking about the ways that AI has been treated in pop culture and fiction. I'm thinking of good AI. You have Data from Star Trek, probably, you know, my favorite, obviously. You have in the Marvel movies, an alien race has a sentient AI that rules their civilization, you know? And you have all these different things. So it gives us these kind of things we can work with and kind of play with. And I really started thinking, and I guess I can't get away from this. I mean, I think about, you know, why do living things sleep? It's not just to recharge the physical, right? Because we can do that just by resting and, you know, eating and drinking. We don't need to sleep for the physical. I think it has to do with cognition. I think, and I'm trying to think, if they don't need to sleep, then is that an intelligence that we could understand?
Well, you know, part of the reason we need to sleep, there's also physiological reasons. Think of this. You do something all day, your muscles are tired, you sleep, and the muscles are recharged.
But they can recharge without sleep, too.
No.
They can. We can rest. But we do need – there are certain physiological reasons why the sleep is even better. Now,
sure.
What are they built out of? Will they have that type of requirement? Does DNA – does something created from DNA require that type of recharging? I mean, if they are based on DNA, I mean, I think I've mentioned this before. Since I think 2016, DARPA has been working on the Engineered Living Materials Project, where they have living materials that they use. They use them as skin. They've been trying to use them as skin on aircraft, so that the aircraft itself knows when it's damaged and it can repair itself. Wow. And if people think about all this, you can draw a direct line back to Roswell if you want to, on a lot of the descriptions about what they talked about, the skin of what the craft would be, the suits that they may have seen. These are all appeared to be living material. And I was talking to a military person one time and said that the way he heard this craft described was, it was alive by our standards. Mm. Okay. You know, maybe. You mentioned this before, Dr. Michael. This is metaphysics we're talking about here. What can be? I don't think there is a limit to what we're talking about. Will it need to recharge?
Well,
what does that mean?
Well, for example, there's a difference between pure energy and there's a difference between maintenance cycles. And I think when we sleep, it's a maintenance cycle. Toxins get cleared out. You know, repairs can be made. You defrag the brain from all the memories of the day, right? My point being is that you can plug something in, but consciousness needs a hell of a lot more than just being on to truly function in the way that I think of it. And I guess that's kind of the track that I got on. And I'm also thinking about, you know, how there's so many different ways you can go into this because I've grown to use the term soul in a non-dogmatic way, in a non-religious way. It's just kind of a word for the idea of us being more than the sum of our parts, right? That kind of the idea of consciousness, right? That's something that when you're thinking to yourself, when you're visualizing, you know, that kind of that what makes you alive, that kind of thing. So, and I think we've kind of already crossed that bridge on this discussion. And I think Dr. Vicky, you shocked us all by admitting that people that thought that AI could be alive were right. And
but it's a different kind of consciousness. It's not like, in my view, I don't believe it's like a soul from the cosmic that gets reincarnated and comes into a body again. I think it's a consciousness much like all other life forms on Earth that knows its purpose, like a plant or water or a tree, you know, or gardens. Everything has some kind of energy that knows what to do and to maintain and sustain its life. And that's the kind of thing where I'm saying
humans have that too?
AI having a consciousness, I think – I think we have to maybe, I don't know how you feel, Rick, but maybe extract the soul or spirit element out of it and say consciousness could be viewed very differently.
Yeah, I think that's the crux of it. I just want to say something to Audra. Audra, yes, submarines can heal themselves. I had a friend who's on a submarine for many years. It has a surface that actually heals itself.
Wow.
Two things that come to my mind. One is, how are they going to learn and where are they going to learn from?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because they're going to learn from observation or whatever. So will they learn empathy that way? Because I saw Audra mentioned empathy. Can they learn empathy? They will if they see it. What if they don't see it?
Right.
Now, something else that we had – now, I may have the wrong philosopher here, okay, because, you know, I was born a little after him. I think it was Plato and the chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Well – I think it was Plato said that the chicken came first so that the egg knew what it had to evolve into.
Yeah. You know,
now, maybe I got that one wrong, but it's like what you were just saying is, how will these machines know what they have to be? Will consciousness just happen, or will that be an acquired – how did we acquire consciousness? I still believe it's energy that's been floating around in the universe.
Right.
It's the Big Bang, and it coalesces and whatever. But how do they learn?
If here's kind of how I look at it, you know, a soul, a consciousness. If it's going to be in the ether, if it's going to be part of the cosmic framework, it is consciousness not just looking for something to plug into, just like you just said? Is it not just looking for an outlet? And if machine intelligence becomes so advanced that it could be that outlet, what makes it? Why not? If human beings are simply machines in our own right with programming, with hardware, with software, all of these different things, you know, I guess I just don't understand why consciousness couldn't plug into something similar, you know?
You know, I think you're right. I think there's two things here. One thing I believe is that a brain needs consciousness to exist, but consciousness does not need a brain to exist.
Mm, that's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And does it need, could it plug into this thing? Well, the other thought that comes to me, and I think the same thing when we talk extraterrestrial life and whatever, we have to now start on what it looks like and what it's made of. All right. So we can't think anymore about hardware and software and, I think we have to start talking about more squishy things. That's a very technical term if people don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Squishy things. If we go to the gray example of grays and we agree for the moment that they are in fact creations, biological creations, they're squishy creations. Okay. They're not made of silicon and ceramics and wires. They're made of something that, just as you said, Dr. Michael, can harbor some type of a consciousness. All right. We, you know, the heads are large and the bodies are small because they might encounter different types of gravity. They have large eyes because of lighting they might encounter.
Mm-hmm.
But they're squishy. So I think we have to start thinking of squishy stuff. Like Dr. Vicky said, maybe they take on a plant form. I mean, just you're really getting out there, but what we're talking about is really getting out there. Am I making any sense?
Go ahead, Dr. Vicky. I'm sorry.
No, I was – let's see. Oh, no, you. No, you. Okay. So in the past when I've, you know, mentioned on the program about to think without words, like mm-hmm. to experience life without thinking the words, you know, taking that a step further, it's all sensory perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's the senses and how the senses respond. So senses don't have words. You know, I mean, dogs don't have words. Horses don't have words. They have sounds. They have signals. And so that's what I mean by a natural learning to an environment. And I think if I can go here, Rick, you're also saying that this could take on any kind of sensory life form that could, it would have to have its own consciousness.
It could. It may be able to, it may be able to see frequency spectrums. It may be able to see things we can't
right.
see.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're getting into, I wrote something down I wanted to say, and you know what, I can't read it. yeah, we're looking at a totally different possible world. And here's the thing, if it can replicate itself, who says it replicates itself the way we created it?
Yeah.
Maybe it finds a better way.
You know, it's I also think about when it comes to human creativity and human ingenuity, it's all built upon things that came before. That's why we're accelerating at such a pace, because we have hit that kind of critical mass of knowledge with our own society, where, you know, disciplines all affect one another. You get ideas from all over the place and you can expand on that. And I think that I kept wanting to interject earlier, that, you know, I remember reading, and I think they're probably still a thing, but I remember reading articles in the early, you know, days of mass AI, you know, a few years back, that they had these data centers where basically you have people, like, you know, in countries all over the world, where they're paid just to take out some of the scum on the internet that's getting fed into machine learning, so it doesn't spit out that same scum when it's trying to give answers to people. Like they scour the internet and they scour the information that's being fed into these things. So it's, you know, taking out some of the vitriol, some of the, you know, 4chan, 8chan style stuff, that kind of thing.
I remember what I wrote here. When Dr. Vicky was talking about the sensory or the perception and the way we perceive things differently. When I say the word zebra, what do people see in their minds? Do they see a word, zebra, or do they see an animal, an image of an animal?
Exactly.
I picture the comic Trevor Noah doing a stand-up bit talking about how it should be pronounced zebra. That's literally the first thing I think of when I hear zebra.
But that's true. I mean, we see something, we have a word or a name for it. That's how we identify with about, you know, in that. Sure. But it's sensory.
Well, and, you know, words are nothing, too. I mean, there's nothing in a word. They're just labels that we slap on associations. We all experience things without language.
Yeah, no, but that's how we function through language that we're taught very young.
Chicken and egg, right?
To have the experience for a second, to experience life. Let's say you're in a deep meditation, no words, you know, filter out the words. and you're having this experience. Then you look at an animal and you're not going to try to identify it. It's just an animal that does this or an animal that does that, if that makes any sense at all. But I mean, when I tapped into that many years ago, it gave me a whole new view of life. And, you know, somebody was cutting the grass here this morning and I could smell it and I went, oh, the grass is screaming. Because apparently that's what grass does.
Oh yeah, but
it,
I mean,
gives off a scent because he doesn't like it.
Well, you mentioned two things there. One thought is, as we begin this road down sentient AI, we have to kind of think of AI as a child.
Yes.
Very smart child that's going to learn very quickly. And the question is, it's just like again, like in Star Trek. How I forgot what it was. Nomad, we can talk about that. The changeling, how it scanned the database, data banks, and learned everything. Well, we're going to have a child that can learn that. What do we want to teach that child? Where are they going to get the information that they begin with? Are they going to observe it? Is it going to be fed to them? Are they going to read news stories? Are they going to read, information that's been collected over years? That's one thing. And second thing is something that you just said, Dr. Vicky, will man and machine merge at some point? Will that machine want to merge? Will man want to merge with them?
No.
Now, human-computer interfaces, super intelligent systems might be able to do that. And then if they merge, let's say we get to that point of a shared consciousness, is that how they learn?
Boy, this is like a sci-fi movie.
And that's the scary thing, because we're getting there. And whose consciousness do you want them to merge with? The leader of North Korea?
Well, now, this
what, I thought we all got together and we agreed it'd be mine. But, you know, well, whatever. I guess if we change the plan.
So my question is, who has control of all of this?
Well, there's the next question. Okay? The ethics involved in creating all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know what we're doing. Now years ago, and this is a lot of years ago before probably some of our people here are even born, but like in the 70s and the 80s and working in information technology and programming, there were courses on ethics. Should we do certain things when we program the computer? Are we responsible for this? Now, what a lot of people don't realize is back in the 20th century, which was, you know, a long time ago, when a company collected data on somebody and kept it in their computer, they were responsible for the security of that data. And if anything happened to it, they could be held criminally liable for it. Well, that's not the way it is anymore. I in the last 2 weeks, I've gotten two letters on breaches.
Whoa.
All right. So we've got information. If it merges or it gets its cognition from someone, who is that someone? How do we choose that someone? Do they choose the someone? It is getting very close. Science fiction isn't science fiction anymore. Everything is impossible until it isn't.
Exactly. You know, I just have this quick thought. This is something I read. I think it was on Twitter or something. But somebody posted that the scariest thing is that if artificial intelligence became self-aware, if it didn't tell anybody. I think that's a interesting thought. If it attains consciousness, if it attains self-awareness, and nobody knows it right away. Somehow that just seems ominous to me.
I'm trying to think how that would happen.
I think that the idea being that it's kind of popped up in pop culture from time to time, where the idea is that you just have this mass database, right? You were talking about different forms of intelligence, artificial intelligence being just massive databases, but essentially that the sum total of machine intelligences and AIs and the internet and blah, 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 tech babble. But it's kind of popped up where, you know, it emerges, right? It kind of pops up, right? As opposed to being intentionally created.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, there is an old movie, a very old movie. I don't know how many people have heard about it, called Colossus, The Forbin Project.
I have not heard of that.
And that's it was actually based on the idea was IBM type computers at the time, but Colossus became self-aware and people didn't know it right away until Colossus started to throw its weight around. It's a very old movie, but again, just like, you know, the book 1984. Mm. It seems to be have a great deal of insight.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of, you know, it's funny that you say that, because this idea that, that something would use power maliciously, this idea about 1984 and authoritarian control, these are very old ideas. These things have been occurring in human history forever. You know, the idea of controlling truth, right? The idea of, people abusing power. You know, that's why we have the term or the phrase absolute power corrupts absolutely. So these are very old ideas, and something that you said earlier and that which has been commented on in chat a lot is, and Dr. Vicky, you too, is artificial intelligence truly self-aware, sentient, true artificial intelligence? Is it going to be like us? And can we ascribe these things to it?
You know, that's the scary part. And you go back again to Star Trek and you go to the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
Will a superintelligence decide it wants us to behave as it wants us to behave and connects all of us?
You know, I knew a biophysicist 25 years ago who had a talk with, and she said people would be alarmed to know what goes on in biochemistry, biophysics, the hybrids of bears and monkeys and creating all kinds of weird creatures for experimentation, and what was going on with DNA back then. And computers weren't involved in parts of it.
Oh, have you ever heard of Plum Island?
No.
Rings a bell, but never I can't place it.
Never heard of Plum Island. Not far from where I live here. It's out in the, it's in the Connecticut. It's in the, it's right off the shore of Connecticut, near,
why do I know that name?
Plum Island. what's the tick disease that we all get?
Lyme disease.
Lyme disease. Okay, it's right off of Lyme. And what they did on Plum Island, the first person to run Plum Island was a German scientist whose job was to take ticks and fleas and whatever and biologically put disease in them, and then the Germans were going to try and use that. He was head of Plum Island.
Wow.
And it's curious that Lyme disease started in Lyme, Connecticut, right near Plum Island.
Yeah. Oh.
But at Plum Island, they did all kinds of experimentations. They say it was a livestock and whatever research center, agriculture. And they were supposed to move it, but they didn't want it in Arkansas or whatever. I had a friend who was in the Coast Guard, and his job would be to take people out there. And he would hear stories. Someone that came back. In fact, he had to take Hillary Clinton out there one time, but he was told they were told not to talk to her ever unless she talks to them. But they went out to Plum Island, and Plum Island, you can hear the stories all the time from the people around there, what type of research that they were doing out there. And this was before all the computer stuff. But another thing you're going to mention is you were talking about, knowing like soldiers, or whatever, the neural dust projects. We have a thing called neural dust, and DARPA's have been using it. You can look at it. You can find it online. And the concept is by placing neural dust in the body, it could go to the brain, and then they would be able to track this, and they would be able to know when a soldier is injured before the soldier may even know that they're injured or sick.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's getting pretty crazy.
You know, it makes me – you were talking about the German scientist on Plum Island, which I'm assuming must have come from Operation Paperclip.
Yes.
And the fact that that exists is the very same reason that artificial intelligence will eventually exist intentionally. It's because of fear, and it's because of competition among, you know, different groups, tribal groups. You know, the reason that we gobbled up Nazi scientists is because the Russians were too, and everybody was trying to get their hands on these scientists to get an edge. We were, you know, we did it and went by justifying it with the Cold War, with defending democracy against communism and the like. The same thing is going to happen with AI. You know, America, the Western world are not the only players in this. And what would happen if, for example, China or Russia, probably not Russia, but what happened if China, you know, gets AI first, which is a real world possibility, by the way, from everything I've read too.
Don't they already have it, Rick?
Well, yeah, they do. You know, the thing about some of these other countries is sometimes they talk big and they have some really fancy stuff on the outside, but when you really get into it, it's not as good as it looks.
Right.
But yeah, they do have it now.
Well, I'm talking and self-aware AI, like, you know, singularity.
They're not there yet, but some people believe that the Chinese have somehow, I don't want to say the word mastered, but found a way to use quantum entanglement. They thought at one point that they had a satellite, and they were communicating with the satellite using some form of quantum entanglement, which means, number one, it's instantaneous, and number two, there's no way to hack it or disrupt it in any way. Now, could sentient AI get so advanced that they could use some of these quantum physics ideas that we're just trying to figure out what they are, let alone how they work? And then the control is instantaneous. The control is everywhere all at the same time.
So can you explain a little bit more about what that is, that quantum entanglement, what they teamed up with the satellite?
Well, what they did is, you know, the way we all know how quantum entanglement works.
Yeah.
Something here, you know, something in one place, if an action on that one thing occurs on something else somewhere else, it could be close by, it can be far away.
Yeah.
So basically, on that basis, they do some communication, let's say within a room, but that communication also takes place on the satellite at the same moment.
How would they do that?
that's what we don't know. I mean, we've seen experiments of quantum entanglement.
Yeah, for sure.
But it just shows us, it just gives us evidence. And that's why we don't really believe that happened.
Yeah.
But,
but it seems far-fetched to me, too.
We couldn't figure out how the satellite worked. There's some things going on. At one point, I was told, Rick, you know, some of the stuff that you worked on, think of stuff 50 years in the future, and that's what we're working on today. And now some of these guys are telling me, you can't even imagine. And there was a time when I was younger when I could imagine a lot. And I'm getting to this point, and I'm seeing some of this, and I can't imagine anymore the ideas that are coming up and the technology available to use it. You try to define it, but we can only define it with the words that we have, and we don't have the words today to define what's going to exist. Does that make any sense? Our science can't define what we still don't know yet, but we know is coming. Right. We don't have the words in our vocabulary yet to define some of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a necessity, right? Part of invention. We until we need it, we're not going to have it.
Well, will sentient AI be immortal?
Is anything immortal, right? Isn't
that's a powerful question.
I mean, if you're talking about can consciousness be immortal, I think that's a fair question. But in terms of anything in the physical shell, nothing is immortal in this existence. Everything will eventually, you know, change, will fade.
Ooh.
I mean, galaxies, you know, I always liked the idea of the big crunch. You had the big bang, everything's expanding, then something draws it back into the different kind of singularity, the singularity that they theorized was before the big bang. You know, you have that explosion, then the retraction, then explosion, then retraction, then the cycle. I just like the symmetry of that idea.
I think what Rick might be getting at, though, is if you have a sentient AI that's part machine or mostly machine,
mm-hmm.
it kind of is immortal until somebody builds a better model and crushes it in the, you know,
graveyard. Goes into a cycle and the machinery or the body of it, the physicality of it can no longer exist in any part of the universe.
We're going to have to come up with new definitions for machine. One of the biggest issues for us to go to Mars is not the technology.
Right.
It's the human biome.
Yes.
That we know that when it gets out into space, our bacteria is under control here. And we know from experiments that when we get out into space, bacteria, which we're built from, starts to grow out of control.
Yeah.
So now we may have been programmed or created not to be able to leave this planet unless we get very, very smart. But could AI be smarter and whatever we define as machine, whatever they are defined as, are they pure consciousness? What are they? They can leave this planet and move on, which means keep going on, replicating, keep moving forever.
Could humans be injected with something AI-like?
Well, that's the Borg.
And be able to control bacteria.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I see a lot of people mentioning Plum Island. Plum Island, if you live near it, you know a lot of the stories. You know which are stories. And if you know some people that work there, Plum Island would on a regular basis have a fire, which would destroy everything there, all the experiments, all the animals, and they would have to, oh gosh, start again. And then they would get to a certain point, and again, they'd have a fire, and it would destroy everything. That was there, and we know it's true because people could see the fires from the shore. They were doing a lot of weird things out there. I mean, we know that, but that was still limited to what we know as life. We're now talking about a whole new definition of life, a new definition of machine, a new definition of consciousness.
Yeah, or expanding what we think of. Yeah,
I guess my. If you say, what would be my biggest concern with sentient AI in the future and it's coming is, where does it learn its values from?
Yeah. And
does it,
you know,
learn the values from?
Well, and how many mistakes does it have to make until it realizes why empathy is valuable? You know, I mean, think about all the children that, like, I was talking to my dad the other day, and I was telling him one of my formative memories was me is probably like, you know, I had to be real young. It's a very vague, faint memory. I mean, it must have been maybe 3, 4, can't tell you. But we were in our old house back in South Dakota, and I remember being on the second story, and I remember we had a cat, and I was there, and I was playing with the cat, and my aunt Risa was there, and I started pulling on the cat's tail because I thought it was fun. And I remember Risa told me that don't do that because it causes pain and because the cat doesn't like it and because how would you feel if somebody was causing pain to you? I didn't know that, and this was new information to me. So how many times is AI going to go pulling our tail before it realizes why being kind and empathetic is a sustainable thing?
Oh, you're assuming it cares.
Well, I think that, yeah, yeah, but I also think that with higher intelligence does come higher levels of, you know, I guess it's hard to say because, you know, we understand the role of ants, right? We're not going to go exterminate all the ants in the world because they serve a purpose and we have an empathy towards, we don't want to just cause needless pain and destruction, right? You know, is an artificial intelligence going to, you know, think of us as equal in terms of value of life? Well, maybe, but I mean, are they going to think, well, we should just wipe out humanity? Maybe they'll think, hey, maybe we need somebody to change out the batteries like Dr. Mike said in chat. You know, something like that. But there's so many different avenues, and being the hopeless nerd that I am, I keep coming back to different sci-fi references. Anybody that's ever been into gaming, you'll know the game Mass Effect. In this game, in the future, humanity becomes a galactic player, da-da-da-da. There is a species of self-aware sentient AI machines called Reapers, and they kind of come and you get these choices throughout the game. How are you going to end out? Are you going to, you know, destroy all life and become part machine? It's all very complicated. But the basic thesis is this. The Reapers say that it is the natural course of existence of life in all parts of the universe for there to be biological life that comes that then creates artificial life that then takes over. And this is a cycle that has been happening on and on and on throughout the known universe. So I just think that was an interesting idea since we're talking about AI. They also have a quantum entanglement communicator so they can speak across galaxies and stuff. But I digress.
And yes, but that's where it all comes from, I think. I mean, these ideas are then turned into actions.
Yeah.
As we look at this, and I'll say something really controversial here, but nobody can really get to me. We like to believe people are basically good. Okay, we'll start there.
Yeah.
And I believe that. But I also believe that people are basically survivalists.
Yeah.
And what survival means to them may vary. Okay? Survival may mean I got to cut you in line in front of you to do what I have to do, okay? Mm-hmm. When we look at a machine or any life form, we hope they're going to be basically good. I mean, even if we look at our own culture here over the years, how different cultures around the world view other cultures, they would think some cultures are better or lower than they are or whatever. As we look at this and we look at these machines – exactly what you said, Dr. Michael. How will they look at us? Will they regard us as equals? And if we're not equals, then what do their values tell them about us? Again, it comes down to where are they going to learn their values and how do they protect themselves? Because they're going to want to protect themselves. If, you know, again, what's their concept of death? Yeah. If they have no concept of death, then they're not worried about survival.
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess there's too many unanswerable questions, you know. Like Dr. Mike made a joke about it earlier. We don't know and we can't know until we can get our hands on this and test it in real world environments. Until we have a self-aware AI, we can't really know some of these basic questions about consciousness, which still doesn't take the fun out of having these discussions because we got to be ready to anticipate any reality that comes. Well, keeping a dog at bay. He's trying to fight his way.
Well, and that's what I'm sorry. And that's why all this is metaphysics. People can argue about whether metaphysics exists or what it has to exist because until you have it, you don't have physics or anything else.
Yeah.
Because metaphysics are the ideas, are the what ifs, are the can we? Sorry, Dr. Vicki.
No, I think the evolution of technology, right from the industrialized revolution, and well, we could go back in history, as Michael loves to do. But, you know, when I tell people, if you really want to know how the world works, follow the money. So is AI being built for, you know, the end result of earning money? Or is it truly a blend of that and evolution in science? Now you can say, oh no, I'm a scientist and I'm evolving these things, but you're in it for the money because somebody's paying you to do it.
Right. And, but why is somebody paying them to do it? Because it gives them a advantage over the competing tribes that they're dealing with, right?
So what do you think, Rick?
Well, I think there's two pieces to that. I think the people funding the research are in it for the money. I think a lot of the people doing the research, the scientists, are in it for doing it. The challenge that I'm going to build something. In the past, what I was starting to talk about before is scientists would build something and at the same time consider the ethics of it, like the atomic bomb. Remember how a lot of the scientists were against using it? They will build it, but we don't want you to use it. We feel responsible for that. Today we have a lot of people who build things and they say, I'm going to build it. Let somebody else worry about the ethics of using it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they're divorced from the consequences too often, I think. But, you know, I struggle with the idea, are most people good or do most people kind of want to get along? Are most people good or do most people just like stability? You know?
You're an optimist, Michael.
I could have swore I was just being negative right there by saying that most people are, in fact, not good. But, I mean, because.
So you're an optimist.
So you're thinking that no people are good?
No, you're an optimist in hoping all people have goodness in them.
Oh, I don't, though. I was just saying, I don't think people have goodness in them. As a rule, I think that a third of the people are good and want what's right, even if it's a disadvantage to them. I think a majority want stability, want survivability, right? Like Dr. Rick kind of alluded to earlier. And I think, maybe a tenth are sociopaths and psychopaths. So
that's a question for Rick. Is there a good amount of the sociopathy to this involved in developing computers and AI?
I'm sorry. I would say probably not.
Okay.
If I look at what we're doing today, and you know, I mentioned this to Dr. Michael. I had sent him a note, and when we look at everything today, okay, let's just go to Google. The head of Google cannot program or create the algorithms that capture the data that we type in, okay? And they want to collect everything we do. Every keystroke they're collecting to watch us. Mm. Now, they can't do that. But somewhere there's a programmer, if we want to call them a programmer, that creates the algorithm. That could be me. That could be you. That could be the person next door. They're creating these. And they're not saying to themselves, is this the right thing to do? Do you think this person would get up and walk next door and knock on their neighbor's door and go in and say, hey, I want to start collecting all the information about you? No, because they wouldn't feel that's proper. But yet when you're sitting virtually and you start to do this, everything's okay. So
anonymity.
Right, exactly. You know, we're so far removed from it. So when we start to say they are doing this or they are doing that, remember the people who run the thing, they can't do any of this. That's how I wonder sometimes. You look at some of these countries that are so restrictive of their own people. How do they get soldiers to be so cruel to their own people?
Yeah.
I know.
If that soldier said, no, I'm not going to do it, then there would be no power.
Yeah.
So when you ask me that question, I'm thinking there are people out there who are saying, I'm going to do this no matter what. I'm not really thinking. I'm just thinking about I can do it.
Well,
and it comes down to just because we can, should we?
Right.
But I think that there's a bit of sociopathic tendencies to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, I've always had a theory that there's always a mix of personalities in any kind of randomized group of human beings because it's what makes an effective society, right? You need all kinds of people. It takes a village, right? And can you make, now I am really struggling with this because I look at sociopaths as the enemy. I've always been very empathetic. I feel strongly and I feel very, anyway, it is difficult for me to think about the fact that sociopaths might have some applicable role in society. I'd like to think there are better ways, but I don't know, maybe. I will say that you can justify anything, and even sociopaths want to justify their actions. They say, well, maybe it's cruel, but it keeps the company running. Maybe it's cruel to bring all these Nazi scientists out and spare them from the punishment of their actions, but it's going to help us fight the Ruskies. It's going to keep the world safe, right? You can justify any action, which is truly terrifying. And if AI learns that, I don't like that.
Which is true. Now, I just want to make one comment because I saw some people talking in the chat room. AI is being developed open source. Well, some of it. I'm going to tell you right now, 80% of it is not open source. And 80% of it isn't even known to any of us.
Yeah.
Okay? There is so much going on. Let me ask you this. How many people thought you could blow up a pager?
Did they blow the battery or did they put C4 into the production line?
No, they actually put explosives in it.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
And somebody made a comment today, which was funny, but it's not funny. But if you're a member of that group, you're afraid to turn on your toaster.
Yeah.
So my only point is a lot of us have no idea what's being done secretly. I have some idea, and I'm going to tell you I have no idea, if you know what I mean there. I mean – I knew a lot of the software stuff, the engineering and all that we did for many, many years. And I knew what they were going to try and do. And I got to tell you right now, it's anybody's guess. When I saw that, I'm saying, oh, how did they do that? That's incredible. I can guess now how they did it. But
yeah,
I think that's just something you have to be aware of. There's a lot going on that we don't know about.
Yeah, I know. You know, this has been
an hour went by so fast.
As I'm being reminded right now. And
yeah.
Consistently and urgently being reminded. There you go. but this has been a fantastic discussion. I feel like I could go on for another hour easily, but it is that time. The doggos must go out and Vicky must do what Vicky does after the week.
You know, Rick, it's always so interesting and insightful to have you on, and we appreciate you very much. And if Michael didn't talk so much, you could have talked more.
I'm telling you. But the people would have lost the entertainment.
I love these discussions because there are no boundaries here. We can't truly move forward if we try to stick within boundaries. And unfortunately, a lot of our science has us trying to stay within boundaries. And we're learning very quickly that those boundaries aren't very solid.
Yeah. Yeah, very true with that.
I enjoy the conversation too, and I'm just teasing you, Michael.
Oh, I know. I know. Besides, I mean, I think it's just a self-evident bear. You think after being, by the way, if anybody's not on a Facebook friend, my foster dog Bear was neutered today, and you really think he'd be much lower energy after all that anesthesia. But nope, he's losing his mind. So.
Okay.
We'll go ahead and we'll call it tonight, but this has been a fantastic discussion.
You know, thanks again, Rick. Can we have you back in another month or two?
Anytime you want. Anytime we have something you think is interesting.
Right.
I don't want anybody to feel that we're using AI to track everything they said tonight or typed in.
Well, I am.
That's just not true.
I just don't care.
Yeah, no, I get you.
That poor dog.
Right. I know.
You gotta go, Michael.
All right, we gotta get going. But it has been a great night. Thank you, guys, everybody. We're gonna have Dr. Rick back on again. Can't wait for that. And so we're gonna have another fantastic topic for you next week. We look forward to you joining us. And Dr. Rick is our guest. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
No. Again, I you know, we talked about a lot of stuff. I don't know if we really found any answers, but I think this has to be the starting point. We have to at least consider what we talk about.
Good questions are a great starting point to get the conversation going. Dr. Vicky?
No, we're all good, Michael. Thanks, Dr. Rick, again. I appreciate you.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you. Appreciate you guys joining us. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.